ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For decades, a quantum computer has been just around the corner. So, where is it?
If you'd asked me very early on, I would have been very pessimistic.
The race to build a quantum computer...
Then I got more pessimistic.
Can anyone actually do it?
And more pessimistic.
One of the biggest tech stories on Earth. I'm Jacinta Bowler. Search for Science Friction, Dead and Alive, on ABC Listen, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I'm at a park in the inner south of Sydney, and I'm playing a game of tennis, but my opponent is a bit unusual. They are about 4 meters tall, they're about 8 meters wide, and they're built like a brick wall. Actually, they literally are a brick wall. This tennis ball is really good at returning whatever I throw at it, always with just a little bit less energy than what I send its way. And our guest today on All in the Mind says there's a life lesson in that.
He'll send me a text, hi, we respond immediately back. I say, hi. Then a week goes by, I don't hear anything.
Oh my gosh, I've been there.
But yeah. I don't do anything, I'm the wall.
From ABC Radio National, this is All in the Mind. I'm Sana Qadar. Today on the show, attachment and how to build a securely attached life.
Our brain really hates being ignored or being excluded, and it has significant psychological and physiological health consequences.
And what all of that has to do with the tennis ball. So one of the big misconceptions about attachment styles is that it's kind of set by the way your parents treat you in early life, and that's what you have for the rest of your life.
Oh, yes, it's definitely not that, because if you think about it, this is like our biggest strength, the way that we associate with other people.
This is Dr. Amir Levine. He's a psychiatrist and a neuroscientist at Columbia University, but you might know him from his extremely popular book, Attached, which came out back in 2010.
This is our biggest strength as a species, because we're not particularly strong animals, yet we can make it to the moon and be in the North Pole and Antarctica because of our ability to collaborate and cooperate with one another. And it just wouldn't make sense that what happened to us in the age of like 1 or 2 is fixed for life. And that's what they find, that attachment styles can change at any time. And there's some studies that show that the parental contribution is actually not that big. It's less than 10% of our adult attachment styles. And another really more recent studies actually show that some childhood friendships is actually more important than our parental relationships in early childhood.
And Amir says this malleable and constantly changing nature of our attachment styles means there's a lot that we can do to shape them. His latest book is called Secure.
And that's really the main thesis of this book, is by designing your interactions with the here and now, you can change your attachment styles. And I really walk people step by step on how to do it.
Yeah, we'll get to some of those steps in a moment. But one thing I wanted to mention is there's an analogy in the book that I really like. You talk about the brain and compare it to skin, in that we spend a lot of time and attention caring for our skin, applying sunscreen and moisturizing.
Especially in Australia.
Yeah, especially in Australia, a lot of sunscreen. So we protect the skin, and we should similarly kind of protect the brain, our social brain. So the question I have is, like, what do we need to do in order to ensure our brain is well moisturized, so to speak? Like, what should we be doing to protect it?
Yeah, we think about our brain as this organ that's tucked away in our skull, so protected, but it's actually one of the most environmentally sensitive organs that we have. It sends out these tendrils, our perceptions, and constantly checks to see what's happening in the environment. And so our brain really hates being ignored or being excluded. It really pains us. And on the other hand, our moisturizer, our sunscreen, all of those good things, is really if we can create like what I call a hyper-inclusive environment. Our brain just loves being super included, like this feeling of connectedness. So if we can learn to create a hyper-connected world for ourselves, it's not just psychological, the benefits. it really affects our longevity. Like people think that if they'll do cold plunges or peptides or all these supplements, that's how they're going to live longer. But actually, the finding about living that secure mode is like probably one of the most powerful ways of creating longevity.
Because you're more socially connected and have deeper relationships?
That hyperconnectedness does something to our physiology. It lowers inflammation. They even had this one wild study, I think it was in the 90s, where they infected people with a cold virus. And they saw that people who had reported feeling more connected were less likely to come down with a cold.
Wow.
So it's that basic, yeah.
How definitive is that link, though?
Oh, so it's right up there with exercise and nutrition, smoking and obesity. It's like one of the major factors of longevity.
Right.
For me, that's the biggest hack from the book. It's not just about improving my relationship, but it's also the physiological advantage of living life in a hyper-connected way.
And there are two acronyms you talk about throughout the book. You return to them over and over that illustrate what it means to live in this hyper-connected, secure way. It's SIMI and CARP. Do you want to talk about what those two things
are? I know. I apologize about these acronyms. It's a good thing there's only two. And actually, this is the meat and potatoes of how you create that secure life for yourself. So the first one, to create that hyper-connectedness, you want to be, I call it CARP. So it's you want to be consistent, available, responsive, reliable, and predictable. So the way that it works, like, let's say we're friends. So I want to be consistent, available, and responsive with you. But it's not enough that I think, oh, I'm so great. I'm CARP. I'm consistent, available, responsive. Uh-uh. It's a relationship. It's a dyad. So I have to make sure that you experience me as reliable and predictable. So it's like a two-factor authentication kind of thing. It's never like perfect, but you try to the best of your ability. So CARP is very important. So you want to be CARP, and you want other people to also be consistent, available, responsive, reliable, and predictable. You want to create an environment where most of your interactions are CARP.
Now, when Amir says this, he's not just talking about the major relationships in your life. It's actually much more mundane and minor than that.
And what really brings about the biggest change, when you understand how the brain works really on the molecular level, you understand that what we oftentimes miss is what I've come to call the seemingly insignificant minor interactions of everyday life. Those little things, those back and forth that we have all day long, they're so important for our brain, and each one of them is an opportunity to change the brain on a structural level.
This is the SIMI.
Yes, the SIMI.
And so do you mean like the interaction you have with like the barista or, you know, someone on the train or something? Like, what do you mean by these seemingly insignificant interactions?
The small interactions that you have with your friends and significant others, of course, they're important. But yes, I also mean with the barista, with acknowledging someone on the train. I personally, I've started being more friendly with people in the elevator or even when I take an Uber, I used to be like, don't talk to me. I'm busy. No, I started having a lot more conversations with people like in Uber. Whenever I have a chance to connect, I connect because remember that longevity hack, I want to be healthier. I want, instead of taking the supplements, I use that. For me, it's almost like I'm like a Pac-Man going over and trying to collect all of those potential SIMIs.
So even those fleeting interactions can have a benefit to our brains and our bodies. And
huge effect because it creates an immersive experience for your brain of this hyper-connected world. And not only that, we're very, very sensitive to that disconnect. There's one study where they had passerbys, there were non-suspecting passerbys, as they were walking towards you, the experimenter either looked at them and acknowledged them, or just like they were instructed to look at their ear, the other side. So like looking at them through thin air. And then they stopped them. They didn't know that they had an intervention, and they gave them a questionnaire about the campus life or something. And these people, without even knowing that they were like experienced that small disconnect, reported feeling less self-esteem, less in control of their life, and that their lives are less meaningful.
Wow.
It's really like really profound effect of just like this flitting, not being acknowledged.
Okay, I want to talk through some of the steps to building a more secure life, depending on the attachment style you're working with. So let's start by talking about anxiously attached folks. What kind of cycles do they often find themselves kind of trapped in, and what can they do to climb out of that and build a more secure life?
So people who have an anxious attachment style have like a sixth sense. They see things in the world that other people can't see. So for them, they're very sensitive to non-carp interactions. So if people, all of a sudden, someone disses them, someone doesn't include them, breaks that chain of connectedness, they become alerted. They become activated. So even things that happen often between anxious and avoidant, let's say a couple, like they're going out together and they spend an amazing weekend together, right? And so the avoidant comes back on Monday and it's like, okay, we spent all this time together. Now they take some time off for themselves because they're avoidant. They need their distance. They don't even think about it, but they just don't text the other person. But for someone anxious, there's a concept that's called the attachment homeostasis. It's kind of like the attachment baseline. And we always have this sense of the attachment baseline. It's like, oh, wow, they usually text me on Monday and I didn't get a text. Danger, 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 danger. And then they get into this idea, wow, this is the beginning of the end. I've seen this before. Whenever people get very close, then they pull away. Like it really goes into this familiar script. And then they start getting upset and then they wait for the person to text. And when they text them, they either are very cold or they attack you. So that's what happens oftentimes to people with anxious attachment style. They get into this protest regret cycle. They attack you and the other guy's like, what do you want from me? We spent all this time. You want more? You never get enough. You're so needy. Not understanding the basic logic of that baseline. And so if you're anxious, you lash out and then there's a distance that happens. But then you miss the person and then you regret it. And then you reach out and apologize. But oftentimes, now the focus is on how you lashed out and you like didn't really behave very well, which oftentimes you didn't. But there was a reason for it.
I think that's going to sound familiar to a lot of people.
You apologize, but the initial reason didn't get upset because you're both clueless about this attachment logic. There's a very, very simple logic. And if you know it, you can circumvent a lot of these cycles of unhappiness in relationships.
Yeah. And so what is your advice to someone who has an anxious attachment style? How can they step-by-step build a more secure attachment style?
A secure life, yes. So people with anxious attachment style, their holy grail is to create a secure village. And what do I mean by a secure village? To really find ways to surround themselves by people who are CARP.
Reminder, CARP stands for people who are consistent, available, reliable, responsive, and predictable.
These are the five pillars of a secure life. And oftentimes what happens for people who are anxious is that they actually give most of their attention to people who are not secure, to people who are not CARP, because they feel like, I need to fix this. What's happening? Why are you not texting me? Why are you not talking to me? While at the same time, what you often find in secure priming therapy when I have clients come in is that they do have other people in their lives that are actually very responsive, that are very CARP, but they don't pay much attention to them because they're always there for them. They always text them when they text you. They're like, oh, they seem boring. You're so occupied in trying to fix something. And part of secure priming therapy is really something very simple. You tell people, no, you have to shift your attention from here, trying to fix, to here. Text the person that always responds to you. And over time, to reprioritize your social habitat and bring to the fore, like, you know, like group boarding when you're trying to board a flight.
Yeah.
The people who are not CARP, they get like group eight. And the people who are CARP, they get priority boarding
right
to your secure village.
So turn up the volume on the people in your life who are consistent, predictable, available, responsive, basically. That's
yes.
What you do.
Like really turn it all the way up.
There's another reason to consider doing this, regardless of whether you have an anxious attachment style or not. Having so-called hasslers in your life can age you. That's the findings in a study published this year in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
It's actually really fascinating that shows in the study, they call these people hasslers, the hasslers in your life. And it shows that each hassler can age you by 9 months. And it's cumulative.
So the amount of people you have in your life that are a hassle to deal with, they age you?
Yes, they age. Each one ages you, biological aging, by 9 months. So it's, if you have more, it's like 2, 18 months. 3, like it's like by 9 months. It's kind of crazy.
The study doesn't prove causation, but it shows an association between hasslers and the rate of aging. And basically, it's thought that these relationships act as chronic stressors. And we know that chronic stress has a range of bad effects on us. If you want to find out more about that study, we'll link to it in our show notes. Wow. Is that why we have more people getting estranged from family? They're cutting off these hassles.
I think so. But I think I actually give certain tools to actually be able to not get there. Because I think even estrangement, in some cases, it's necessary. But many times, you can actually maintain a relationship with some of those hasslers, but really right-size it and make it work for you rather than have to cut something off. Because sometimes when you cut something off, you actually maintain the relationship more so in your mind.
Psychologically.
Yes, because you're always like, what's happening with them? It actually makes it loom larger in your psychologically than with the solution that I offer.
And so is the solution, again, the turning down the volume on that relationship? Or like, what is the solution for that?
There's a very specific tool in the book that's called Wall Tennis with Love. And I don't know if you've ever played wall tennis, tennis against the wall.
Like just hitting a ball up against a wall?
Yeah, like with a sector when you're practicing tennis.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So in Amir's Wall Tennis with Love, you are the wall. The person who isn't CARP, consistent, available, responsive, reliable, predictable, they are the person hitting the ball at you. The idea is that a tennis wall always returns the ball, but just with a little bit less energy.
I have a friend, for example, that now I do wall tennis with love with because the relationship has been difficult. We've been friends for many, many years, like more than a decade. But there have been times I would call him, like he wouldn't always respond in a way that actually was helpful. Sometimes he would ignore me. Different things that have happened over the years. So wall tennis with love, basically what it means is like, for example, he'll send me a text, hi. And then I immediately, because it's wall tennis with love, you respond immediately back. I was like, hi. Then a week goes by. Mm. I don't hear anything.
Oh my gosh, I've been there.
But yeah. I don't do anything. I'm the wall. He texts me another hi. And then I say, hi. Then 2 days go by again. And then all of a sudden he calls me. And if I can, I always answer. And actually the conversation is really nice and warm. And it's not like, because it's with love. I'm not trying to cut him off. I'm trying to keep the back and forth in a way that works, because when I used to initiate, I would actually find myself oftentimes very upset and would feel those non-CARP interactions. But here, I right-size the relationship and I actually feel that he has a much better place in my life. But when something happens to me that I need help, I'm not going to turn to him. I've done that so many times and it ended up very badly.
Right.
I have all these CARP people that I've turned the volume on. I'm going to turn to them.
Okay, so you're like responding to him with the same energy he's bringing to the relationship, basically. So you're focusing your main attention elsewhere on the people who are reliable, predictable around. But with him, you're still responding with kindness, but at the same level that he's coming to you at. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Because if I've initiated before, he wasn't CARP. He wasn't consistent, available, and responsive. Mm-hmm. So it really activated my attachment.
Yeah, I really loved reading this part because it felt like I was speaking exactly about a relationship in my life, a friendship in my life, where basically, I feel like I was more into them than they were into me is what was going on. But it would be this exact thing with the text that you're talking about. I would text and I wouldn't hear for days. And then they would text maybe a week and a half later and I'd get back immediately. And then the whole thing would start again. And I was like, I don't think I should be investing this much energy in a friendship that's not bouncing back at the same level. So this feels very very helpful for how to deal with these dynamics you can enter into with friendships.
Yes.
From ABC Radio National, this is All in the Mind. I'm Sana Qadar. Today, how to develop your secure attachment skills with neuroscientist and psychiatrist, Dr. Amir Levine. Okay, I could ask you so much more about the anxious attachment style, but we should move on to avoidant, because the avoidant style gets a really bad rap. Talk about some of the cycles these folks can fall into and how they can build a more secure life for themselves. What steps do they need to take that are different?
I have to say that secure is my way of making amends to the avoidance in this world, because in the other book, I didn't have that much experience working with them in my clinical practice back then. And a lot of the research itself, I find is biased against them in some ways. But when I started working with people who are avoidant, you really hear their plight and you see their suffering too, that they want to connect, but they just don't, like they fall into these pitfalls. And they're not even aware about what's going on. And they're being given these stories about your childhood and this and that. But I find that if you walk them through some of the basic logic that they're not understanding, that it can bring about amazing transformation. And there, I mentioned three main pitfalls in the book. One is called heal thyself. The other one is not respecting the attachment homeostasis. And the third one is the closeness overdose. So which one should we talk about first?
Ooh, let's talk about heal thyself.
Yeah, that's actually the number one. So the heal thyself, people who are avoidant, whenever they have a problem, they're very good in sorting things out on their own. So when the rest of the population, which is about 70%, 75%, like come to them with an issue, like something happened to me, they're like, okay, why are you coming? What are you coming to me for? Like, heal thyself. What do you want me to do for you? You take care of your own problem. That's what I do. They don't even think that it could be different for other people. It just doesn't make any sense to them. But now they get themselves into big trouble. Why? Because if I'm in trouble and I come to someone and then all of a sudden they cut me off, what does he do? It triggers the attachment system. And I forget about the reason why I was in trouble and what it helped. And I put it aside. Now you're the problem.
Yeah.
Because you're not responding to me. So all of a sudden it compounds in a crazy way.
Yeah. I feel I'm getting flashes of familiarity hearing you talk about this.
So I teach them, you know, that heal thyself. You're the minority in this. Mm. A lot of the time for avoidance, if you teach them, if you're not going to be carp, it's like having a child in the supermarket and disappearing all of a sudden and expecting them to just like stay calm. Like, no, they're going to become frantic. It's the same kind of neurocircuitry in adults too.
Right. Okay. So is the way for an avoidantly attached person to become more secure and have a more secure life basically to start being more available, responsive, consistent, all of that? Is that what they need to do?
No, but the thing is, what you teach them is that if you do just a little bit, because attachment's about those seamies, it's not those huge gestures. If you just like hold their hand, hug them, say, I'm so sorry, just give something, then usually they're not gonna bother you so much anymore. They actually gain the freedom and the distance that they want.
Mm.
It's like you're hacking the system.
Right. But another pattern or trap that avoidance can sometimes fall into is something that Amir calls the closeness overdose.
They finally meet someone and they really like them, but then it's like, oh, it's too much, it's too close. They feel suffocated by closeness. So sometimes what they try to do is like, no, I have to go all in. And they try to actually create more closeness. So they would say, let's go to a whole weekend together. Or I give it a really good example of this woman who actually, like, I'm going to throw you a party and I'm going to go come to the hospital and be there when you're having your treatment. And all of these things that the other person didn't ask for, because she wants to push through that feeling, oh, I feel that I need to take my space. And that's a big mistake for avoidance, because it can really backfire.
Right.
Because one of the things that avoidants really need to learn is to pace themselves and not to try to outrun their biology, because attachment is such a powerful force. The best thing that we can do is learn how to live with our biology.
Yeah, so it's not a bad thing to be a person who needs more space. It's just more about making your relationships more stable overall by adjusting how you respond to people, so they're not freaking out around you, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I want to talk briefly about the fearful avoidant type, because, like, is everything just a lot harder if you fall into this basket?
Yes, because what happens is, like, you push people away, but also you really seek a lot of closeness. So for a regular avoidant, not a fearful avoidant, it's like, oh, I don't need relationships. I can take care of my own. A person who's fearful avoidant really is like, no, I'm lonely. I want company, the company of other people. But when they actually get close to people, it starts to really hurt. They're very sensitive and they get suffocated by too much closeness. So it's constant push-pull situation. So there you need to learn how to work with really tiptoe between the two to find your way to security.
Oh, gosh.
But it's possible.
It's possible. I mean, you talk a lot in the book about, as well, building community, like to build the secure life, you need to find these secure people around who are responsive and reliable, etc. But it occurs to me, you know, like there's a lot of talk about the loneliness epidemic. We have a lot of people spending a lot more time alone on screens as opposed to meeting up in real life. People are more prone to like ghosting and just being flaky in general. So it feels like a really hard task to build the community we want in this day and age. And I guess I'm wondering, is kind of, does the advice boil down to you kind of need to be the change you want to see in the world? Like start by acting secure and available to the people around you. And then that's how you go forward.
So I think it's, it's a very nuanced answer because I think there's several things that are happening with this whole loneliness epidemic that's being touted. I think because the research really talks about an objective experience loneliness than like an amount of people that we're connected to. And I think what happens when we have all of these insecure people in our lives that all of a sudden don't text us, I think it actually, the research actually shows when we're being excluded, it actually increases our feeling of that we're not connected to others. And then it decreases our self-esteem. And it also gives us a sense that we're less in control of our life, and that life is less meaningful. It has this profound psychological effect. So I feel that those insecure interactions actually enhance that feeling of loneliness. And if we re-diverted and really turned the volume down on those insecure interactions, we would feel more connected and like just by creating a tiny bit of more of a hyper-connected life. And remember, it's about those seamies. It's about connecting to people all around us, mm-hmm. not necessarily forming these very close relationships. It's like you can really collect all of these different interactions and start building it like that. But I really think that a lot of the loneliness epidemic is actually is this insecure epidemic of having a lot of people behaving insecurely around you with the profound psychological effects that it has. Mm. And we had a few very secure people that are, we can always have that reciprocity, it would feel very, very different.
That's fascinating. I guess one thing I'm wondering is like, if everyone starts turning down the volume on those in their life that are avoidant and insecure, are you going to quickly end up with a very small circle and start having to build a new circle where you're again going to run into people who are avoidant and anxious, and then you're like just kind of constantly shuffling through looking for the right people who are these golden secure folk?
So the one thing that we didn't really, that I skipped over and that I didn't mention is this concept of the CARP intervention. I call it the CARP intervention.
So we're not talking about the fish, to be clear, if you just tuned in now.
Yeah. Sort of being consistent, available, responsive, reliable, and predictable. So when you find that someone is not that in your life, some of the research about secure attachment shows that to some degree, we all have secure kernels inside us, that we've had like these amazing secure experiences throughout our life, whether it's a parent, a sibling, a teacher, a mentor, and that we internalize some of these experiences, and it's really a secure potential that lies within us. So before we cut, we sort of do that wall tennis with love and all of that stuff. I tell people to do this CARP intervention and to explain to people about CARP and about the brain.
As in actually talk to your friends and family about what you know is required?
I mean, you can either say it like completely that way. It's like, you know, the brain, all the research, the brain is really sensitive and it really is harmful for the brain. So you can either do it that way, or there's one example of one of my patients who met up with this guy for a one-night stand and they had a lot of fun. And then sort of they were going to meet up again for another one-night stand. And then a few days in between, he wasn't that responsive to her text. So after the second night, she told him, look, I really like you, but for me, I'm very responsive and consistent, and I really want that in my life too. I can't really deal with it. Because if you're not going to respond to me, I'm just going to be hitting up your phone. And I just don't like that about myself. I can't help it. And I don't like it. So I really, if this is going to work out, because we seem to like each other and we have fun together and we feel it feels actually more intimate and there's a potential, then not going to work out if you're not going to be that way. And he said, you know, I'm actually notoriously non-responsive. All my friends complain about that, but I'm going to give it a try.
Wow. Okay.
And now 10 years later, two kids.
Aww.
Yeah, no, it's a good story. And he says, because she put it in such a simple way, it didn't feel like this huge ask and it felt like something that I can do.
That's a nice happy story of people working through their disparate attachment styles. I like that.
Yeah. But usually before what you asked, once you find those scar people, I have to say in the process of my work, I've really come to fall in love with the secures of this world. And once you bring some of them to a prominent place in your life, they're keepers. They're there to stay.
Mm.
And so when you create that world for yourself, brain changes, and it's really a remarkable change.
That is Dr. Amir Levine, psychiatrist, neuroscientist, and Columbia University professor. He's also the author of the books Attached and Secure. Thanks to producer Rose Kerr, senior producer James Bullen, and sound engineer Tegan Nichols. I'm Sana Kadar. That's it for All in the Mind this week. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.